traigo es azúcar, azúcar pa' ti. El ritmo que traigo es azúcar, azúcar pa' mí. El ritmo que traigo es azúcar, azúcar pa' ti.
That was a section of Azúcar by Eddie Palmieri and his band La Perfecta from 1965. The band included Ismael Quintana on vocals, Barry Rogers and Jose Rodriguez on trombones, George Castro on flute, Dave Perez on bass, and Manny Oquendo and Tommy Lopez on percussion. Eddie Palmieri is my guest on this episode of the Burning Ambulance podcast. Hello, I'm Phil Freeman, and welcome to episode 25 of the Burning Ambulance podcast. If this is your first time listening, welcome. And if you've been with us for a while, welcome back. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and everywhere else podcasts can be found, but please consider subscribing on iTunes and giving us a star rating or a review if you enjoy the show. And if you want to support us financially so we can keep doing this, head to patreon.com/burningambulance and become a patron. And one of these days I'll come up with some rewards and stuff. The Burning Ambulance podcast is also part of the OSIRIS podcast network, which features over 24 shows on a vast range of subjects. So head to osirispod.com to look through their selection and see if there's anything else there that sounds interesting. As I said, this episode of the show features an interview with pianist, composer, arranger, and bandleader Eddie Palmieri, one of the true legends of Latin music. He's someone who's achieved tremendous things, both artistically and culturally, over the course of a 60-plus year career. Azúcar, for example, the piece that I started this episode with, is a landmark in Latin music history. It's over 9 minutes long, with extended instrumental solos. It's a really pioneering Latin jazz number, and it's part of the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry for that reason. He was also awarded the first Grammy for Latin music for his album The Son of Latin Music. He's also been a supporter of a variety of political causes during his career, and in the late 60s and early 70s did a lot of shows in prisons, including recording a live album at Sing Sing. He also recorded a live record at the University of Puerto Rico in the heat of political unrest there. In this interview, we talk about a broad range of things, including many of his classic records, his troubles within the music industry over the years, his thoughts on Latin music's future, his love of jazz, and much, much more. I'm going to play another piece of music now. This is a re-recording of another one of his classic pieces, Vámonos Pal Monte, from his new album Full Circle, which came out at the end of July, and also has a corresponding app which allows you to fade down individual tracks from individual instruments on the recording and play along with the music. So listen to that, and afterwards you'll hear my conversation with Eddie Palmieri. Your new record, it's your second album with Rope-A-Dope, so you've had a lot of trouble with labels over the years. How's this deal working out so far?
Oh, it's excellent, because we made there's two companies. It's really going to come out, and it came out on Rope-A-Dope, but it's really Uprising is the other company.
So is that, it's like your own label basically, or?
Yes, my son and a gentleman called Frank Abinante and Zoilo Torres, the executive. And it's working out fine. It's not. It's about, you know, by the time I had my own company, and I went through a lot of problems with companies before, because at that time, especially when I signed with Roulette, which was Tico, that was with the Morris Levy. And once you sign your contract, and then the woven tapestry behind his desk that read, "Oh Lord, bring me a bastard with talent." So at least he was sincerely honest, because once you record for him, everything belongs to him.
Yeah, there was a whole book about him and a couple other guys that were like sort of legendary crooks.
Well, you know, he was backed up by the Genovese family and the Colombo family. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is that could never thank him enough, you know, that I was able to record for him. I started with Alegre, and then he bought Alegre out for $80,000, and the debt that he was in, Al Santiago was the owner. And then I signed with Tico, because the orchestra was very hot in the street, and there was a gentleman called Symphony Sid that used to have the radio program from 12 to 5 in the morning, and another gentleman called Jack Hook, who eventually became the manager of Tito Puente. And they were there in my signing, and then I stood with Tico until eventually I left, you know. And then I signed, he made a deal, you don't leave, but he made a deal with a gentleman called Harvey Averne and Sam Golf, and for $35,000, which was the first 17 and a half albums that was sold. That money went to Morris Levy. It was $2 wholesale then. So it was for $35,000. Then I signed with Mango, and then they changed the name Mango, and they changed it to Coco, because it was the company in the Caribbean that had the name Mango already. Mm-hmm. So then they changed to Coco. And I recorded them one album, and the first album was in 74. And that was the with numbers like Puerto Rico and Adoración, that's called Sentido. Mm-hmm. And then I started to record the Son of Latin Music, and that was in 75. And then I didn't have a singer, because my singer, Ismael Quintana, had gone with Fania. Fania had very good relationships with all the singers that sang with the orchestras they were signed with. For example, Hector Lavoe left Willy Colon, and then he was very successful. You know, still they were all in the same company, but they went on their own. Pete El Conde left Johnny Pacheco, and Ismael Miranda left Larry Harlow. So they couldn't get me, so they negotiated with my singer, Ismael Quintana, which is the wonderful human being in the voice of La Perfecta, and he signed with Fania, and I wished him the very best. And it was great because he traveled, you know, with them. He went to Africa with Muhammad Ali, and it was very exciting for him. Then I started to record the second album called, it was gonna be called King Camache. That has to do with the Santeria religion. Mm-hmm. And coming out of Cuba, and it's Camache is what the madrina or the padrino, they cut four pieces of coconut and then throw it, and how they face up, like the four white would be called alafia. They all have different significance, okay? But the main thing is that was good. That was a beautiful album cover, and it never happened because the company then finished the album without me. My musician recorded without me, and I told him, if you release this record that I have not finished, I'll never record for you again. And they didn't believe me, and I locked myself up in my home in Long Island for 3 years.
Wow.
And came out when a beautiful friend of mine called Michelle Zarin, that used to be the manager of Tower of Power in California, she made a deal with me with CBS. It was $500,000 deal. And that $35,000 that they paid for my contract in the CBS gave them $225,000. They gave me $50,000. And then I recorded Lukumi Makumba Voodoo. Mm-hmm. And for Epic, and it wasn't successful. And that meant that they didn't pick up the release. That meant I went back to the same original company, and I locked up in my home for 2 more years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. your new record, it's all reworkings of older pieces. So
that's like the Eddie Palmieri show.
Okay,
there's not a place I go on the planet that has to do with Latin dance music, because I also have the Latin Jazz Orchestra, but that they don't ask for Muñeca, Vámonos Pa'l Monte is like a national anthem in South America and Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And Azúcar is in the Library of Congress, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's an honor. And one after the other. So what's in that app is a selection that was picked by Frank Abanate, you know, and And I told them, oh, fine, well, they'll record them again. I love them, you know.
Yeah.
And they came out quite interesting.
Yeah, the app lets people kind of fade tracks up and down to kind of figure out how the music is put together, I guess, and maybe you like to play along with it if they're, you know,
yeah, they
students
play along
or something.
It comes with the music and everything, so if a trombone player, student, wants to play the trombone part, he just removes the trombone that he's after the first or second trombone, and then he plays along with the record.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new technology, and the one who recommended us to me to do that was, again, Mr. Frank Abernathy.
Yeah.
He's from Venezuela.
Oh, okay.
And he plays a great piano, a flamenco piano.
Ah, okay. The album, one of the bonus tracks, is a big band version of Vámonos Pa'l Monte. So tell me a little bit about that, how that, you know,
well,
arrangement
there was
came
two,
together.
And the one before that, Pa' la Ocha Tambor, they were recorded in another studio for another project, and it was never used. So those two compositions were inserted into the CD. Remember, there wasn't going to be a CD. It was an app, but they made a CD out of the app because it came out so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two numbers, compositions, Pa' la Ocha Tambor, that was done for me for the arrangement, Mr. Rene Hernandez, who was my musical godfather. He was the pianist for the great Machino Orchestra. Did it for me. I never recorded it till now, you know, when you see it now, because I had recorded that in when I did live at Sing Sing. Mm-hmm. I had written it the day before, and then we just did it, you know. But now this was an arrangement that I wanted, and before he passed away, he did it for me. So I recorded it again, and then the big band was done by a gentleman called Jose Madera. And Jose Madera, a great arranger, he played percussion with Tito Puente for more than 20 years or more. And his mm-hmm. father started with the Machino Orchestra in 1939, a very musical family.
Yeah.
And he did the Vámonos Pa'l Monte for the big band.
Okay, okay. There's a lot of names that I recognize on this record, like players who are doing really hardcore jazz stuff a lot of the time, because that's where I know them from. So where is the line for you in the phrase Latin jazz? Is it like 50-50, or is it more Latin than jazz? You know, how do you think of your music?
My Latin jazz is danceable. You can see it all in the album called Wisdom, Sabiduría.
Mm-hmm.
It's the greatest dance Latin jazz album ever recorded, in my opinion. We just don't play jazz, you know, just for, and, you know, preform and just, you know, Latin jazz. There's nothing wrong with that, but I call that jazz Latin.
Mm-hmm.
When I call Latin jazz, and when you have the whole rhythm section, timbal, conga, and bongo, and there's a structure, which is always a danceable structure that's going to excite in every competition. And to get that excitement in every competition, I learned that intuitively from the Cubans when I studied the Cuban music in 1956, when I joined Vicentico Valdez Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Vicentico Valdez was the elastic voice of the Americas. He sang with Tito Puente when my brother Charlie Palmieri played piano, Manny Oquendo playing bongo, Tommy Lopez playing conga, Mongo Santa Maria with Tito Puente. Then Vicentico leaves and makes his own conjunto in 54. I joined that orchestra in 56, recommended by my brother. And there, the gentleman Manny Oquendo that left Tito to go with Vicentico made it his business to bring me 75, 78, and I studied them till this day. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that made it, I learned it intuitively, how come they excite me in less than 3 minutes. You can only record 245 then to put 12 compositions in an LP.
I've read you
anyway,
said...
you can only do so. Then what happened is we broke that whole precedent when I did Azúcar Pa' Ti for Tico. And the reason it went to over 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes, is because the A&R man, at that time nobody called producer, A&R man, artist and repertoire, his name was Mr. Teddy Rieg. And Teddy Rieg was the manager of the Count Basie Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed me to play the way they were recording with jazz at that time, you know, like suites and that like that. So I told him, this is not going to be the norm. He said, Eddie, just record it. Don't worry about it. Then that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And Azuka became one of the biggest hits of that time. And like I said before, it was chosen for the Library of Congress of the United States, and that's an honor.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I've read that you were influenced by Thelonious Monk and McCoy Tyner and players like that, but...
McCoy Tyner is my mentor.
See, but when I listen to your stuff, I feel like I hear a lot of classical music in your solos, even more than I hear jazz, especially in the early 60s La Perfecta stuff. So tell me about what you kind of took from, you know, from Tyner and Monk and stuff.
Well, I didn't understand jazz, you know, until I dedicated myself to all Afro-Cuban music, and then it became Afro-Caribbean music. Because the umbilical cord of information coming from Cuba to the United States started in the 20s, 30s, the 40s. The late 40s, 50 to 60, was the highest degree, the highest strata that the Latin music reached, and never reached that again. And that's the time of the mambo and the cha-cha-cha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I dedicated myself just for that. When I made the orchestra La Perfecta, Barry Rogers, I already knew about the few because of my brother, you know, some of the jazz I knew, certainly about Duke Ellington and, you know, and Louis Armstrong, you know, the pioneers, okay? Mm-hmm. And Thelonious Monk, naturally, Bud Powell, but not really to listen to them, you know, except one day we were playing in the Palladium Ballroom, which was the greatest ballroom ever for Latin music, and Barry Rogers, my trombone player, just Eddie, after, you know, we finished it on a Sunday. We finished early. I think Tito Puente, then, you know, used to close. He took me to the Birdland, and I saw the original John Coltrane quartet. And then I saw John Coltrane sit down. I don't know if he was writing the payroll or writing lyrics to A Love Supreme, because he dies about a year and a half later, something like that, or a year later. And all I did was watch McCoy Tyner, who took a solo for more than 20, 25 minutes while he was writing, and he just kept soloing. Eventually, I couldn't even see his left hand. And at that moment, he certainly became my mentor. And the chordal structures that he was using in fourth harmonies and that left hand pedal point impressed me to the highest degree. And from then on, I started to listen, you know, more, study jazz more, you know, and Bill Evans, another one of my favorite pianists, Amal Jamar, then they all became my mentors, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that I use the harmonic structures of jazz with the most complicated rhythmical pattern in the world, which comes from Africa, came to when the African captive is brought by the Spaniards in to the Caribbean, in Cuba in particular. Then that cross, you know, between the Spanish and the African came the mulatto. And the mulatto put the world to dance, you know, with this drum. And the drum is the pulse of my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know you don't like the term salsa because it's not actually a musical term. So what are the sort of main rhythms and forms that you work with, and can you sort of explain how they differ?
Well, it all comes from the mother rumba. What happened was that when the Spaniards brings in, they had the rumba flamenco, and the mulatto, you know, in Africa, they removed the word flamenco, kept rumba, and as soon as they did that, they had a prejudgment on it. Racism set in. That's for the lower class people. That's for the blacks, you know, and how wrong they were. They put the world to dance. And it's one of the most incredible stories, you know, that exists, you know, and using that those rhythmical patterns, since I know them extremely well, that takes you into rhythm when it started Changui and Danzong and Son Montuno and Song, like Guaracha and Mambo Cha Cha Cha. I mean, indeed, they all have their proper names, and to put it under the name salsa is a total lack of respect to these rhythmical patterns and names that they have their proper names. And the one who answered it the best was Tito Puente. When they asked him about salsa. He said, I put salsa in my spaghetti, baby. You can't top that one.
Yeah, yeah. So the different rhythms and patterns, they're basically like, you know, a slightly different count, or, you know, they're from, like, how does it, you know, how does it work? Like, what's the difference between, you know, mambo what? And, you know, a rumba?
Oh, they're different. No, they're different. The mambo is up-tempo, you know, and it has its form of being played. And then the cha-cha-cha is, you know, a medium tempo, just like Lindo Yambu on the album that you have. You mm-hmm. know, that's one of the greatest songs that was ever recorded in Cuba, and it became my favorite, and we always played it. It's one of my hits also, and that's when you talk about the mother rumba, it has three derivatives: Guaguancó, Yambú, and Columbia. Columbia, they dance it. It's fast of tempo, and a guy dances that with two daggers in his hands, and it's quite frightening to watch. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. After the band La Perfecta ended in 68, you did a series of albums that were really kind of progressive, musically speaking. And so I'd like to ask about some of those, starting with Justicia and Superimposition. Because on both of those albums, the more traditional...
Superimposition was the first one with the new orchestra, with Alfredo Chocolate Amentero, that played trumpet. Mm-hmm. After Barry Rogers, he left the band, and so Chocolate and Jose Rodriguez, the trombone player from Brazil, that came in from Santo Domingo, they stood, and then the whole band changed, and I call it the rhythm sections, the Little Devils. That was with Nicky Marrero and Eladio Perez and Chucky Lopez. Chucky Lopez was the son of Tommy Lopez, and it was just amazing. And a gentleman that came in, Andy Gonzalez from the Gonzalez Brothers, and it was a new band, of the young players, and that gave me a complete a new stimuli. Excited to see these young players wanting to be, you know, with me, and I would say like I would be like the Art Blakey of Latin music. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to kind of come to the jazz messengers, you follow?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to come to the Eddie Palmieri school, and that's something that I'm quite honored about.
Yeah. It's interesting because on both of those records, there's more traditional Latin material on side one and then more experimental stuff on side two.
Right. But in Justicia, I was studying with my last teacher, Mr. Bob Bianco, that... he also plays their guitar. He was the one that took me into the world of Joseph Schillinger, which helped me tremendously also. And Justicia came because Bob Bianco used to teach at the Henry George School, and I took the course, and he wrote his famous book called Progress and Poverty. And that's when I found out that there's only one problem on the planet, and that's called poverty. Poverty is the parent of wars and crime all over the world. So we only treat symptoms, we'll never get to the cause. And then we got to thank our lucky stars for corruption throughout the world. Otherwise, we won't be able to exist. Every day, things go up except salary. Mm-hmm. And when it stays dormant, you know, or you're making less, you could buy less, that's the degree of poverty. Quite interesting. So Justicia, I was in Venezuela, and there was a gentleman called Francisco Luna, a newspaper man, very elegant. And I asked him, who would be the son or the daughter of Justicia? And he said, La Libertad Lógico. And I recorded a composition called La Libertad Lógico, which is against the state. The state is any state, but the state is the one that just makes it impossible for us to really exist, you know. There's certainly a division of that has to do with the same situation. It's all on Hollywood Drive. Mm-hmm. That's also the message that was there. At that time, the streets had a lot of tension. I was going out with one of the musicians, you know, I mean, promoters of, that was in the Young Lords. And we played all the prisons. I played Attica twice. I went to Lewisburg when they brought in the people from Watergate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I played Rikers a few times. In South America, I played a prison. So we went up and never charged. We just went and played because there was a lot of friends that we had that were in jail. At that time, you had to fight the Rockefeller laws, and it was just a terrible time. And that's when you had the black movement also,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
militant, you know. So all of that, I went through and I put into my music at that time to make a statement.
Yeah, and at the concert you did at the University of Puerto Rico, there was a lot of like unrest on the campus there too around that same time.
Right. But that wasn't supposed to be recorded. That was accidentally recorded by two college guys that were going there, and they just threw two microphones, little microphones on the bandstand, and that was the recording that came out. And then I had it in the closet for many years, and then I went at 71 when I signed with Coco. I sold them the tape,
mm-hmm.
you know. It wasn't the master, but it was just so well recorded. And my brother Charlie's playing organ, and it's an amazing, exciting LP.
Yeah. He's also, your brother is also on organ on Vámonos Pa'l Monte, the album.
Oh, that will never be equal or surpassed. That is the greatest organ solo ever taken in our genre, and I'll put it against anyone in any jazz genre, anything. My brother was a genius on his instrument.
It was
piano.
It was such an interesting
piano and organ.
Yeah. The whole thing was so interesting, that especially on that track, because I also really was fascinated by the way you use like echo and reverb on the percussion, where it becomes almost psychedelic. So I mean, what were you aiming for with that album?
Well,
it really
the thing
is
was
like
that, you know, like the, when you're flat, you're recording flat, you know, the bongo and bongo, you know, you got to add a little, you got to wet them a little bit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they give you that atmosphere of like you're in the live recording. You know, and it all depends on the mixing could either help you or kill you. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm going to be doing mastering on Monday for the Big Band album that's going to come out in October, dedicated to my wife that died, passed away 4 years ago.
Oh.
It's called My Major Light, Mi Luz Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Gilberto Santa Rosa sings 5. Germán Olivera, my singer, sings 5. And we flew to Vegas, my son and I, and we recorded Carlos Santana, and he did 1.
Oh, nice.
And the album is the most, it's the greatest album ever recorded for the 21st century, in my opinion. And I'll put it against any in the 20th century because I got 2 contemporary soneros, never been done before, Gilberto Santa Rosa and Luis, and Germán Olivera. Plus, it's a 20-piece orchestra. 5 saxes, 4 trombones, and 4 trumpets. Frightening.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to hear that when that comes out.
Yeah. I'm curious a little bit about your relationship with your brother. I find it interesting because you were 9 years apart. And
yeah, he was my inspiration completely.
And I mean, my brother is 3 years younger than me, and we talk like twice a year. So 9 years is a lot to like, you know, to be as tight as you guys were.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was I remember when we talked about classical music, I studied with Miss Margaret Barnes. She's in the Negro history books, and she was a concert pianist, and she had a studio in the Carnegie Hall building. On the top floor, they rented to certain teachers. They had you know, like for ballet, opera, and that. And then she had her own studio, and my brother was a student. And then my brother recommended me, and I used to take the train from the Bronx, because I was raised in the Bronx. I'm born in Manhattan at 110th Street, 112th Street, and between Madison and Park, and going down to the Charlie Palmieri Way. And I used to take the train, I was 11 years old, and I studied with her for a few years, but I always wanted to play timbales. And by 13, I went and played timbales with my uncle, El Chino y su alma tropical, Chino and his tropical heart. And I stood with him for about 3 years, 2 to 3 years around there. And my mother, who didn't want me to play drums, bought me the heaviest case to put the timbales in. And sure enough, it's called Superiority of Women. And now she would wait for my uncle to blow the horn. Come on, Eddie, let's go to do the gig. And I'm going to go pick up that case. And she would tell me, Edwin, don't you see how beautiful your brother looks when he's going to go to play and work and he doesn't carry an instrument? When will you learn, Eduardo? I'm learning, Ma. And I was certainly heading for a hernia. So I eventually just gave the timbales to my uncle and the bongo man that started playing timbales, and I went back on the piano. My mother.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the one that put us both, my brother and I, on the piano.
Now, when you formed the band Harlem River Drive, like, there was kind of a lot of sort of, in those early 70s, there was kind of a lot of people blending different things like Latin music and rock and progressive rock and jazz, and everything was kind of blurry. So, I mean, was that what you were, did you see an opening there for that kind of thing for yourself?
No, the reason was that the gentleman, Calvin Snooky Clash, had lyrics. One of those lyrics was Seeds of Life. The other one was called the Harlem River Drive theme. And then he also had one called Broken Home. Now, that Broken Home is one of the most interesting recordings I've ever done, because we didn't record it for that album per se in the studio. At that time, Miles Davis was doing an album called In a Silent Way.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually he did A Bitch's Brew. But that In a Silent Way, it captured my, you know, my imagination. I loved it. So I did a freeform. That freeform was recorded, excuse me, previously, and it was in the can. And when we did Harlem River Drive, you know, I superimposed the lyrics onto that freeform with Jimmy Norman singing, and it's a classic. Ronnie Cuba, you know, playing baritone and soprano sax. Cornell Dupree, because Ronnie Cuba was playing with the Aretha Franklin Orchestra, and he brought me Cornell Dupree, Gerald Jamot on bass, and it was just and the best musicians, you know, in New York. And then we went and we recorded Harlem River Drive, and then one number called Idle Hands, which was written by Marilyn Hershey and my teacher Bob Bianco.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics say it right away. You all know the story, how it all began. It took 5 days, and then came man. All the land was free. So are we. No poverty to lead to slavery. No slavery to lead to poverty. In those lyrics. So that's the Bible. It took 5 days, and then came man. But everything else on it, it's, again, against the state. The state. And my problem was I wanted to record that and go crossover. So I asked Morris Levy to put me on, to let me do that for Roulette, not Tico, mm-hmm. where Tommy James and the Shondells were recording. And he gave me the permission, and I recorded Harlem River Drive. The problem was my biggest fans that were the Weathermen. Do you know who the Weathermen are?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, they were my biggest fan, and the FBI, CIA had a raid, and they found my album in all their cars, especially the leader of the Weathermen, whatever. And now the CIA and FBI come to see Morris Levy. It was the second time that I brought the CIA. The first time was when I did Mozambique. Mama Kunkong is Mozambique. And the word Mozambique were the first Cubans that arrived from Cuba, and they accused me of being a communist. And then Alpha 66 threatened the radio station that if you play Eddie Palmieri, we're going to blow up your station. So naturally, the CIA and FBI came in to see Morris Levy. The second time was the one with the Weathermen, and now Morris Levy calls me in, and he tells me, Mr. Palmieri, what did you record for me this time? I said, it's Harlem River Drive. You gave me the permission. That's what's on Harlem River Drive. I didn't know it was going to land in the hands of the weatherman. You know, he goes, Mr. Palmieri, listen. I don't need the FBI and the CIA to come here to see me for something that I didn't do. Is that clear, Mr. Palmieri? I said, clear the bell, boys. and then we kept, again, the next album after that, again, most of me can't give a shit. Since I knew that I was being robbed very well, you know, and you can't say anything until I had a baby that was born, Gabriela won, and she died at birth, you know, and I went to see Marcy Lee for some money to bury, and he refused. And then he said that he buried my father 8 times, you know, and that kind of shit. So I never recorded for him again until they made that deal with the gentlemen I told you before that owned Mango and Coco.
Yeah.
That's why you hear the I'm the most sincere recording artist, you know, that I've ever recorded, because I always go for excellence with the best musicians so that my fans, you know, or the public, whoever buys it, hears the best that I can give them with the best musicians that exist at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do something like that to me, you know, then you'll never see me again.
Yeah.
I didn't care what it cost me, and it cost me a lot, because that was 5 years I locked myself up in my home.
Yeah. That album...
But you have to... You're dealing with morals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's something that I live and die with, you know.
Yeah. The album The Son of Latin Music, I'm really fascinated by the first track, Nada de Ti, because of the violin. Like, the album is more traditional than the ones before it. It's all acoustic instruments, but it's still really kind of adventurous in terms of the actual sound. So what was your, you know, what was
well,
your concept
that,
there?
Yeah, The Son of Latin Music, that won the first Grammy also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it took 17 years to put it in the category. And Alfredo de la Fe played violin, and great violin, is from Cuba. And he lives in South America now, in Colombia. And they brought back Barry Rogers for me, and Barry Rogers did the orchestration for me. But that's Un Dia Bonito is the classic in there.
Mm-hmm.
You see the piano playing first, and then the orchestra, you know, bah! Kind of like timpanis, you know, when it's like symphonic situation, a symphonic form, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into la comparsa, you know, the conga, and then we go into the regular dance tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a three-movement recording, one of the most fascinating recordings I ever done. And now we just got the Jose Madera did it now for big band. 5 saxes, 4 trombones, and 4 trumpets, and I can't wait to hear it, and eventually I'll record it again.
Yeah.
With a big sound.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that the album Unfinished Masterpiece is called that because they put it out before you thought it was done, the label?
No, it was not before. As soon as I saw that, they also lied to Mr. Rene Hernandez, who did the music for me, in Puerto Rico, because, you know, I took the young singer Lalo Rodriguez to him, and the musicians themselves recorded without me, and I was another scar tissue. There was nothing for me to say, but if you release that album, you'll never, you know, I'll never record for you again. And then he believed that I would do that.
Yeah.
And when the album came out, my wife was working with me downtown. We had an office that we ran, but we couldn't keep it going. And she put a ribbon behind it and sent it to the owner that said, shove it. That was my wife.
Yeah. And when you did come back, the album Lukumi Makumba Voodoo, like, that album is really interesting too, because it's got rock guitars on some of it. It's got synthesizers.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a couple of songs in English. There's like the 2 long tracks. Were you again, the crossover thing, were you aiming for like a white rock audience that time, maybe?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know? And which album is that then? Oh, the Lukumi Makumabudo, of course.
Yeah.
But they put me in Epic, and the joke throughout to my friends that I told them, you know, that they handled the black, you know, recordings and that. But when Lukumi Makumabudo came out, Epic wasn't black enough. And then you see the cover, that's Dodo Collares, that they represent the different deities in the Santeria religion. And you, if you look closely on an album, you see the when they put it on the model, she had goose pimples.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting career.
Mm-hmm. So do you think
and that... And it's only getting better. Now I'm working with the Symphonic Orchestra at Rutgers University because I teach their piano classes.
Oh, okay.
Master classes. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring the Symphonic Orchestra to Carnegie Hall where I did a recital when I was 11 years old, 12 years old, the Wild Theater. I want to bring the whole school, the Symphonic Orchestra in Rutgers University is the conductor is from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fine sounding orchestra, and I want to, what I'm going to write for them is really going to be like symphonic pop, but I'm going to bring in the tambores de bata, bomba plena, the folkloric instruments from Puerto Rico, and this is under the heading of, imagine if the great composers, you know, had any kind of inkling to the 8A series that came out of Africa, and I want to put that together in a presentation, and I should be ready to do that within 2 or 3 years.
Nice. I saw your album Exploration from 1978. All the tracks kind of on the LP had categories under the titles. Like one was labeled Latin Soul, one was labeled Latin Jazz,
yeah,
one was labeled Jazz Waltz.
Yeah, that's a compilation. I had nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm curious though about the record, you know, because when I look through the credits on your records, like, I see a lot of jazz dudes like Ron Carter and Steve Gadd and Ronnie Cooper and people like
that.
Well,
yeah, the best for one certain composition that you do. I was doing some jazz waltzes and that, and you go for the best. And if you're able to get them, if you're gonna pay somebody, then pay the best.
Mm-hmm,
you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And you got quality. Ron Carter's one of the greatest bass players that we have on the planet. I just did a concert now with Christian McBride. He also is my bass mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, I'm quite and honored that I'm respecting the jazz idiom. You know, the jazz players, they love the way I you know my music, how I write it. They hear the jazz harmonies on it, and they're intrigued with my piano playing, my soloing.
Mm-hmm.
That Donald Harrison, the great alto man from that did my 3 albums, Palmas, Arete, and Vortex with Brian Lynch and Conrad Erwick, he was the alto man, told me he was with Art Blakely and so was Brian Lynch. Well, Donald told me, you know, I want to tell you something. You solo on the piano like a drummer. So, well, the piano is a percussive instrument, but he's talking about my form and my timing. Mm-hmm. Everything is timing. The timing is, you can learn anything, but you can't, you have to be born with timing.
Yeah. Well, Donald, he's from New Orleans, I think, and there's a lot of African and Latin music down there. So
yeah, no, his father had 7 African tribes, and then he passed away, Chief Joseph, and did a book on him that Brian Lynch got for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald handles 3 of the tribes, the African tribe, because he travels, you know, playing with his orchestras, you know, the different engagements that he does. He's to me, he's the greatest alto player alive today, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I've
and
seen him play a couple
and a
times.
And a gentleman that you can't believe.
Yeah. Your self-titled album from 1981 with the piano on the cover.
Oh, that's a classic.
The first track is so crazy to me because it goes through so many elements. It starts out, it's
yeah,
like this big band tango, and then
That's the respect to the singer Carlos Gardel. Mm-hmm. He was a great tango singer, and he died in a car in an airplane crash in Colombia, Cali, Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the movie in Puerto Rico with my mother and my father, and when I heard it, I'm looking at it, then I started working, you know, how to put that together, because El Día Que Tú Me Quieras is a classic a tango, and you know, and I did it in an up-tempo with the great singer Cheo Feliciano.
Mm-hmm.
And Rene Hernandez did the arrangement to me, and you know, he did two of them, Ritmo Alegre, the side A, and then he did Le Dia Que Me Quiera. And then one day I went to see him. I used to go see him whenever I went to Puerto Rico, and he would give me a couple hours, you know, I would go see him. And then one day he told me, Eddie, I see. And it was called, it's like what Schillinger called the design of the whole. I know what you want. And then he gave me the most incredible composition, and I gave him the fugue that I wanted, everything that I, the structure that I gave him, he followed it to a T, and that was to respect to the country and to the tango, to Argentina. And then I had the greatest first trumpet player that ever, you know, still alive, he retired, but that's, his name was Victor Paz,
mm-hmm.
P-A-Z, from Panama, and he did all the trumpets on the whole album, you know. And then Barry Rogers did all the trombones on side B.
Mm-hmm.
It's a masterpiece, timing, everything, and the execution of the brass is, it cannot be surpassed, my opinion.
Yeah. Now, in the 80s, you kind of moved more toward the Latin jazz side, because I remember hearing that you were not a big fan of what they called the Salsa Romantica sort of records.
Oh, no, that's
out.
That's a disaster. That's a rhythmical and harmonic disaster. I recommend anybody that goes to see these orchestras, you know, to go dance to them, I recommend that they get some small pillows, like they're selling them now at My Pillow, but the small ones for you and your partner, because you're going to fall asleep on the dance floor dancing to these orchestras that have no excitement. See, the excitement comes from what we call tension and resistance.
Mm-hmm.
In sex would be an orgasm. In music, it would be the combination of the rhythmical pattern, most complicated in the world, with the harmonic structure of jazz to reach the highest degree of a musical climax. And I have that in all my compositions. I don't guess I'm going to excite you with my orchestra. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Took me years, learned it intuitively, then I learned it scientifically, when I started studying whatever I was able to learn from Bob Bianco teaching me the Schillinger system of music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think, sort of, because it felt like in those decades, Latin music generally seemed to be kind of slumped in terms of cultural prominence from where it had been in the 70s. What do you think caused that?
Oh, because, again, the change. And they're calling it Salsa Francois, Salsa Erotica, everything but the true Afro-Cuban, Afro-Caribbean dance orchestra, which is excitement to get the dancers in a frenzy. That doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only orchestra that's doing that to the degree that what I'm talking to you about is my orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no other orchestra, you know.
Yeah, there's a couple.
And then you put on the Latin radio, you know, commercial radio. You know, if you're looking to commit suicide, put on the Latin radio, and listen to it like a whole week. You'll probably hang yourself. and I'm in a good mood today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how much I love my music. See, I would learn to be a dance orchestra leader. In the Palladium, you had 1,000, you know, dancers coming at you, who's going to win? Who's going to win? It was between the dancers and the orchestra. And that's what made it so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. In general, I feel like Latin music in America is not really marketed to non-Latin audiences at all. It's very difficult.
No, it's a disaster. And now worse, there's no more records. You know, everything is digital. And also for jazz, a disaster, you know, in sales. And Latin jazz doesn't go anywhere. You know, it's just a terrible situation we're in.
Yeah, yeah. But you've managed to reach all kinds of audiences. So, I mean, do different crowds have different expectations of you? Does, like, a jazz club crowd want longer solos?
See, the reason when I went into the Latin jazz, it was, again, my wife. She said, if you can do it, do it. And don't you see the writing on the wall and what they're doing to the Latin music? You got to go into Latin jazz, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So do those audiences want longer solos versus, you know, a Latin crowd wanting more groove and rhythm?
Well, no matter if I play Latin jazz or the Latin music with the singer, you know, I'm going to get them to dance because my structures in Latin jazz are danceable.
Mm-hmm.
Which I mentioned before.
Yeah.
See? They're danceable. Mm-hmm. And everything, I'm the dance orchestra leader. I put people to dance. I know how to do that. Or you're going to dance in your chair, or I'm going to excite you so much you're going to start dancing in the aisles, which they've done already on me and a lot of the concerts that I played.
How would you characterize the role of improvisation in Latin music generally?
Well, you got to start with Johann Sebastian Bach. He was the greatest improviser. He was the real jazz player. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then, you know, and then you strive to have your own signature. And I certainly have mine, and I'm very proud of that.
You've recorded a lot of pieces over and over. Like, you've recorded Resemblance and Random Thoughts and Cobarde and pieces like that.
Yeah, but Resemblance was done with Cal Jada. Mm-hmm. Then I did it again. I did it called Buscándote on the Latin on the album called La Verdad, The Truth. The three albums I did in Puerto Rico with the orchestra in Puerto Rico that I took to Europe. That was Pablo Parrumba, that was going to be for Celia Cruz, but we couldn't get together on the billing because everything with her was Celia and Johnny, Celia and Willie, Celia and Billy, and that wasn't going to work with me. So it was going to be Eddie Palmieri singing The God is Celia Cruz, and they didn't go for it. That won the first Grammy in Puerto Rico. No other orchestra had brought a Grammy into Puerto Rico then. And then the second album, Solito, wins another Grammy. And then the third one is La Verdad. In La Verdad, that's the greatest thing of, if you could find it, you know, in La Verdad, you look for Buscándote. That's Resemblance.
Mm-hmm.
But with an extra, I changed the pattern of the composition. In the release, it's completely different. And it's sung by the leader of Los Hispanos, that's in Puerto Rico, one of the great famous quartet singers. And then this one is the father, the son, because the son is a trombone player, Rafi Torres. His sister and his sister-in-law, they sang the chorale.
Mm-hmm.
Make it your business to find Buscándote, and you'll see why. And that's a classic recording, and it just went by the wayside, you know, because at that time Fania already was on the way completely going downhill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you feel like when you were signed with, you know, Tico and Coco and a lot of other artists were sort of under the Fania umbrella, did you feel like there was a competition in that world, sort of like the competition between bands in a way?
Oh yeah, sure. You know, when we met, my biggest one was Ray Barreto, and I. It got to a point that they in the Riverside Plaza, they put a rink, like a boxing ring. Yeah, and I still beat him by 3% points. he said he always comes in as the bridesmaid, never the bride. But he always had great orchestras, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, he knew how to put a focus together.
So I guess my last question is, jazz has a very strong academic side. Like, you can get degrees and all that sort of stuff. Is the same thing true, because you mentioned that you teach, so is the same thing true for Latin music? And do you think there's as strong a generation of young Latin players as there is in jazz at the moment? Because right now, no, with jazz, there's a lot of young guys in their 20s and, you know, who are really hot. And so,
right, they're all in my band.
Yeah, the Curtis brothers. I mean, those guys
Curtis
are fantastic.
Louis Fouché. Louis Fouché is one of the greatest saxophonists of alto. He had a choice to go to MIT or become a musician. He did both. He's a walking genius, a marvelous young man, and he's also on the Stephen Colbert show.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, just an incredible Jonathan Powell, an incredible young trumpet player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna baptize his daughter, Amy Hansa. He's married to a Japanese woman.
Ah,
beautiful.
Yeah. So is there that strong academic side for Latin music, or how is the tradition being passed on?
No, there is nothing. There's no recognition on the Latin, you know, really, compared to the ones that you get in jazz. You know what I mean? In jazz, you really get, you know, like I'm in the National Endowment of the Arts, you know,
mm-hmm.
and which is a jazz master. I was on it.
Mm-hmm.
They also gave it to Ray Barreto, you know. He played a lot with a lot of the jazz orchestras, you know, conga.
Yeah.
And I'm just quite blessed with what I've been able to receive, like the Chubb Scholarship, you know, it was given to me by Robert Farris Thompson at Yale. And all the rewards that I've gotten came to really the major jazz, you know, category. And that's an honor that you can... You can't buy it, you know what I mean? You have to earn it.
Yeah. So, but as somebody that's looking toward the future, like, what do you see as the future of this kind of music if there's not, you know, really a class of young guys coming up?
It's just
going to
get worse and worse. It isn't going to get better. Everything is going to be worse and worse, the conditions that exist. And the only thing you could do is do the best you can. I'll never record another Latin jazz album. After Sabiduría, I can't equal or pass the pass of that. And after this album for my wife, I'm not going to be able to surpass that either. That's why I'm looking towards the Sephardic Pop,
mm-hmm.
to present that in Carnegie Hall. And I have music that I can go to any symphonic orchestra and with my crew men and drummers and have a presentation.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
because there's funding for symphonic orchestras. There's no funding for Latin orchestras or Latin jazz or jazz orchestras. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, that was my interview with Eddie Palmieri, and that's the end of this episode of the Burning Ambulance podcast, which is part of the OSIRIS Podcast Network. Visit osirispod.com to check out their other shows and see if any of them are for you. And if you want to support this show, visit patreon.com/burningambulance and become a patron. Thanks for listening, and I hope you come back for the next one. OSIRIS.